up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Super Gamer Boys. I'm your host, Colonel and Dad, Garrett Morlang, and here in the virtual studio with me is the king of video games and elite tastemaker, Adrian Holmes, the birthday boy.
Hey,
what?
That'd be me. Old man reporting, old snake reporting in for duty.
Old snake.
War has changed.
I love that quote only because those games came out, I guess they're not, were they similar years? I'm trying to think, like Fallout, was it Fallout 3 or Fallout 4? Like, war never changes. And then like Metal Gear's like, war has changed.
It's changed,
like,
actually.
Wait a second, which one is it? Oh man, but yeah, you had a birthday over the weekend. How was it? Do you have a big raging party to stay out
by
late?
By big raging party, you mean, did you go out to dinner with your folks? Yeah, okay. I did that.
Hey, you know what? That's great. That's fantastic. That's my idea of a good time, too.
You know, happy to make 33 and do not feel 33 in the slightest up here anyway. Definitely, I can hear things popping and creaking and cricking, but I guess that comes with the territory, so.
Totally. That's one thing I was actually just talking to Dan and Nate about, because I think Dan just had a birthday last week too, something like that. We were talking about how I was just like, man, I forget that I turned 30 last year. Mm-hmm. Like, I still feel like I'm like 22. I don't know.
Like, that's what I feel like.
Like, mentally, that's where I'm at. Yeah, it's a weird thing to think about. Like, I'm 30 and I have a wife and kids and a job. Like, I'm old.
I'm an old man.
Like, I'm the guy who, when I was a kid, I'd be like, why would I want to hang out with that loser?
Right, What's that guy?
Here I am on the internet, like, hey, kiddos, hang out with me. I like video games. Oh man, no, that is not our demographic. We're not going for the kids, just to be extremely clear.
Okay, yes, let's clear that up.
Not looking for any kids.
We are all ages, okay?
All ages, especially those between 25 and 35. You know,
yes.
That's a good demographic there.
There we go. That works a lot better.
Real quick here, we don't do this a lot on the channel, but I just want to give a shout out to Kajoma. He gave us a good old raid here at the beginning of the stream, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
That guy.
But a Lindsay in the chat actually says, I'm over 40 now, and I think I'm in my 20s, at least until my back goes out.
Like, same.
I know. It's like, hey, until things actually start breaking down, I'm still in my 20s.
You get up one morning, and you're kind of like, oh, man, what's going on with my hip? Like, where's that flexibility at, you know?
What is going on?
Right.
Oh, man. Well, we got a jam-packed show here, so let's move on here. We got some serious news stories for you tonight. Today, we're talking about... Why do my notes suck? Why do my show notes suck every time?
I don't know. You write them.
Okay. Today we're talking about the Yuzu v Nintendo lawsuit. More massive layoffs and Toys for Bob goes indie. But first, let's give a quick shout out to our Patreon producers, Bumble Smash and Kajoma01, and our super gamer sponsors, Julie Bates, Mama Mare, and Carrie. If you want to be awesome just like those folks, head over to patreon.com/supergamerboys where you can support us starting at just $1. That's right, $1 a month. You get episodes early and ad-free, such as this show and Super Later Boys, which is our Patreon exclusive show. Only get it if you support us on Patreon, which we should probably figure out what we're doing for this month because it's going to come out in the next 2 weeks probably. It should come out
that is a good idea.
The middle of the month.
We should probably get on that.
Yeah, we got a couple of weeks, but yeah, we should figure that out. But we'll talk more about our Patreon later on the show. I do want to give a huge shout out to Jack Sirachiate and DJ Chews for allowing us to use their music here on the show. Right now, tonight, you are listening to my Jack Sirachiate playlist. So if you're enjoying that, head over to Spotify or Apple Music in the links description over on YouTube and podcast description there. Click on those, add them to your playlist, listen to them, repeat.
On repeat.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, Adrian, it's time to check the mail.
Let's do it.
All right, this week we got a fun little question. We so back in the day, We got questions like this. It was fun. I'm trying to remember who did it. It might have been our old Patreon producer, Matt Liu. And he would write in, and he was kind of doing a little D&D adventure via mailbag, basically. Well, Sir Prince-a-Lot, bringing it back. He says, uh-oh. Garrett and Adrian are sucked through a portal and are now in the middle of a 16-bit dungeon-crawling roguelike. What would your weapons of choice be, and what type of companions would you hope to find along the way as you try to escape the dungeon?
Ooh, 16-bit dungeon-crawling roguelike.
Yes.
A la Dead Cells.
That's what I kind of picture. As soon as I heard the description, I'm thinking like something like Dead Cells or something like
Dead
that.
Dead Cells, Blasphemous, Rogue Legacy.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm into this. What's the equipment again?
So we got to pick what we would like our weapon to be and what type of companions we would hope to find along the way, I assume, to help us. Either are they fighting companions? We need to decide now. Are they going to be fighting companions, or are they just like a shopkeep and stuff like that?
This is
like,
both of us together, right? Like we're
I assume.
Because like I was just going to say each other would be the correct answer, but
It does say that we go through the portal together, so we're already
cool
together. So I assume if we're looking, so at this point, a companion, I guess from his question, I would have to assume it's more like. Like I said, like I would like to see a shopkeep that allows me to buy magical items and whatnot, or like someone who can give me, or like a what's that game? What's the one that Eddie what's really likes? And the sequel's been waiting forever to come out.
What is it? Oh, Hollow Knight.
Hollow Knight. In Hollow Knight, you find the guy who has like the map pieces and stuff like that. Like that would be extremely helpful. Finding
that's fair.
Like someone who's just like, oh, I've already mapped out the cave. Like it'll just cost you a little bit of gold, a little bit of treasure. Like, all right, here you go. That would probably be really helpful, right? Nowhere.
A map,
going.
Absolutely. If we're in a dungeon crawler, my weapon would absolutely be a mage's staff. No question about it.
So you're casting spells out there.
I'm slinging spells left
the
and right.
Magic thing.
Thunder, thunder, fire. Smack it on the ground, it does like a little earthquake, knocks people back, you know? Versatility.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I like that. Uh-huh. My weapon, man, realistically, I'd probably also go ranged, but I'm assuming this is like
a fantastical. We can't both be ranged, though.
I know, but what I was going to say, in this fantastical world, I would assume that I would probably, I don't know, like, I would hope that with going into this world, we're not just like ourselves. We're probably like, I don't know, in some way transformed to where we're like a little more warrior-like. Because if you just drop me in the middle of a dungeon, I'm dead. I don't care what weapon and companion I have. I'm dead, right?
Like, see, that's why I like the staff, because you don't really need a whole lot of gumption. I mean, I could swing a sword if I needed to, but...
I gotta know how to cast the spells though. Like off the top of your head, do you know how to cast spells right now?
Don't you have to feel it? You gotta feel it deep down, right? All in your core. Feeling.
That's what it is.
You gotta know. You know what I mean?
So I would like, you know, it'd be fun. Is like a freaking bow staff or something. That's what I think would be. Like a quarter staff to use as like a. Like a weapon, so I'd want.
This
to be
is
like
warrior Garrett you're talking about, right?
Almost
not
a
regular.
Warrior Garrett. I'd want to be like more like a monk. Like I'm thinking D&D classes, like some sort of like monk or something. But
if you were a monk, you just need one and two. You're good to go.
But like, I want the option of the quarter staff. Like I want it like that. I don't know. Yeah, I think that'd be so much fun just to like beat the crap out of people with a stick, just launch people off the edges of cliffs and stuff. Like just fall down in a well.
You're thinking D&D. I'm thinking Final Fantasy, right? Because Final Fantasy, the way monks work is if they don't have any weapons, they get strong.
Oh, that's the same in D&D as well. Same in D&D. Okay. They're usually more focused on fist generally.
Right.
But I just think it'd be like just what I'm thinking is I want the stamina and the like speed of a monk, but using the freaking quarter staff where I'm just like like twirl
you're
it,
broken.
Like
you're broken.
helicopter fly away, you know. And Lindsay in the chat makes a good point. Real swords can be heavy to swing too, so
that's fair.
Swords are heavy. Imagine that. That's a fun one. What other companions would we want? Like, would we want like a little, what if we came across like this little like imp or goblin or something that like helped us, fought alongside us? That'd be so fun. Like, he's actually friendly. Like, we go to attack him. He's like, wait, hang on. Let me help you in your dungeon crawl.
But then we get double crossed
at the end. Oh no, right. Dang it. He comes back.
See, I was thinking like a hatchling phoenix, I think would be pretty cool. Ooh. Cause it could light the path and if in the dark areas and stuff like that and that breathe fire, you know?
Totally. Yeah, that would be cool. Ah, that'd be fun. I want to play D&D. Now I want to play D&D.
That's what this has gotten me.
This is what's gotten into my head. It's like, all right, I'm ready to play some dang D&D. All right. Well, thank you so much, Sir Prince-a-Lot, for that question. We appreciate it. If you want to write in your fun questions, think about DMing us on social media, or the easiest way and most fun way, I would say, is joining our Discord completely free. It is supergamerboys.com/Discord. And join us over there. Hang out during the week. Talk about what games you're playing, what movies you've been watching. Kind of pretty much do whatever you want over there, to be honest.
Wait a minute now. Take it easy.
Anything you want. Whatever you want to do on Discord.
You tell people to do anything they want, they're going to do anything they want. And our Discord is going to get shut down immediately.
Oh, man.
Or it's going to get full of wangs. No.
We only had to do that once. We only had to shut down the Discord that one time. Remember that? We got like all of a sudden just a flood of people trying to join the Discord, and they were a bunch of spam bots, and they were started like posting a bunch of crap. I like locked it down so fast, put a bot in there. So that way, like, there's a gated entry now. Like, you have to go through the checkpoint. You got to go through the checkpoint first to make sure you're all right. Oh, man. Yeah. Things got a little wild.
We should figure out if there's a way we can like do a little test or something to get in. Like solve a riddle or something. That'd be pretty neat.
Oh, yeah, that would be. Right now, you just got to check a box. But
yeah,
anyone can check a box.
You never know. There might be a way.
Maybe we should have a riddle.
Yeah.
Riddle me this. It's awesome. Cool. Oh, look at that. People are joining the Discord live while we're speaking.
No way.
It's great. It's a good time over here. All right, Adrian. With that,
yes, sir.
I think it's time for the Nerdy Nudes.
I gotcha. It's now time for the Nerdy Nudes.
Ah, yes. Beautiful. That, I don't know what you did. Normally Discord, on the recording, it comes through.
Uh-huh.
It's beautiful. It's glorious. But our call, we record the call over Discord.
Did you hear the whole thing for the first
Discord
time?
Discord usually cuts it out. For some reason, I heard the whole thing, and it was...
Whoa!
I almost just glossed past it, and then I was like, wait a second, something was different. What is going on here? And then I realized, like, oh,
that
shoot.
That never happened.
I could hear Adrian. I could hear the whole thing for myself. Usually, I have to wait, like, an hour and a half before I edit the podcast. Here we are.
Wow, you guys just witnessed history right here. Man. That's wild.
Love it. Absolutely love it. All righty. Well, let's get into this first news story. If I do this correctly,
let's do it.
Yeah, we did it. We did it. I did the thing. This first news story. Yuzu devs pay Nintendo $2.4 million, shut down the massive Switch emulator, declare we cannot continue to allow such extensive piracy and pull all code offline. This is written by Dustin Bailey over at GamesRadar. So the original story, let's start with the original story. Last week, a new court filing says that the developers behind the popular Switch emulator Yuzu have agreed to pay $2.4 million settlement to Nintendo, and the not yet official final judgment suggests that the software itself is not long for this world. In a joint filing published today, Nintendo of America and Tropic Haze LLC, the company behind Yuzu, now consent to judgment in favor of Nintendo and jointly move the court to enter monetary relief in the sum of $2.4 million in favor of Nintendo and against the defendant. The proposed, The proposed final judgment and permanent injunction would have the Yuzu devs permanently barred from offering to the public, providing, marketing, advertising, promoting, selling, testing, hosting, cloning, distributing, or otherwise trafficking in Yuzu or any source code or features of Yuzu. The terms would also have the Yuzu website shut down and would have the devs turn over any physical circumvention device or modified Switch consoles to Nintendo itself. That judgment has again not yet been made final, but given that the filing was made jointly between lawyers representing Nintendo and Tropic Haze, it's safe to say that the future for Yuzu does not look bright. Emulation itself is not illegal. In fact, you can argue that the Switch itself is a massive emulator by Nintendo's own design. Nintendo's suit... that's a stretch. What? That's a stretch, Games Radar. I don't know about that.
Okay, continue. Okay. We'll circle back to that.
Nintendo's suit against Yuzu instead argue that the emulator illegally circumvents the Switch's game encryption keys and that the emulator helped promote 1 million illegal downloads of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom before launch. Ooh. All this is awaiting a judge's go-ahead, but notably a settlement would keep the case... blah, blah, blah. I'm going to skip this last part because here's the update. Later on the day, they got the update. On the heels of its settlement with Nintendo, Yuzu's development team released a public statement explicitly confirming that the emulator is dead and will soon be scrubbed from the internet. The timing and wording of the statement has raised eyebrows and alarms. Yeah, right? Among emulation enthusiasts, with many worrying that it set a bad omen for the other emulator projects. The full statement reads, "We write today to inform you that Yuzu and Yuzu support of Citra are being discontinued, effective immediately. Yuzu and its team have always been against piracy. We started the projects in good faith, out of passion for Nintendo and its consoles and games. And we're not intending to cause harm. But we see now that because our projects can circumvent Nintendo's technological protection measures and allow users to play games outside of authorized hardware, they have this. Hang on, let me finish it, and then I'll say what I was going to say. They have led to extensive piracy. In particular, we have been deeply disappointed when users have used our software to leak game content prior to its release and ruin the experience for legitimate purchasers and fans. We have come to the decision that we cannot continue to allow this to occur. Piracy was never our intention. And we believe that was, for all you audio listeners, that was a wink. And we believe that piracy of video games on video game consoles should end. Wink. Effective today. It doesn't say wink, but that's my editorial. Effective today, we will be pulling our code repositories offline, discontinuing our Patreon accounts and Discord servers, and soon shutting down our websites. We hope our actions will be a small step toward ending piracy of all creators' works. Thank you for all the years of support and for understanding our decision. Here's the deal. This statement was definitely written by a Nintendo lawyer. Handed to Yuzu, and they're like, post this. And Yuzu's
we're
like,
gonna add another million on there.
And Yuzu's like, we're already paying you $2.4 million. They're like, and then, yeah,
you wanna pay
like,
three?
We'll bump it. We can do it. We got you by the nards, dude. We can do whatever we want right now.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
All over. Now, before we get started, I can only speak for me because I don't know how you feel about it, Garrett.
Okay.
I am for emulation in the guise of for preservation's sake, right? So here's where I land on it. If a company or a publisher or a developer does not make a game readily available for purchase on a modern storefront that they operate, if you cannot easily, legally purchase the game, then I don't see why you wouldn't be able to get a copy and emulate it, right? Because if the company's not going to make it available to you, then what are you supposed to do if you want to enjoy the work?
Well, you got to spend like $600 on eBay for a copy or right, more, which, like thousands, depending on what it is. Like
exactly, yeah. Which that company is not going to see any of.
Yeah, they don't see that anyways.
Right. So if the work is not readily available, if the game, whatever, is not readily available for purchase or easily obtainable, like without being, you know, $800 like a Sega CD game is or something like that,
yeah,
then I see no problem with it, especially for games that. You know, we're made by developers who are out of business or publishers who are no longer here, you know, that you know are not going to have any chance of coming back. Absolutely do it. Absolutely. But at the same time,
I agree with you. Yeah. And it's like if you can readily available, like if something's readily available on like a digital storefront or you can go to Walmart and buy it or even like if you can get it secondhand, but for again, like, I can go to eBay and buy it like reasonably priced. But when it's like. Mm-hmm. You can't get it digitally. You can't buy it physically. And yeah, eBay is more like collector's items. Here you go. Spend thousands of dollars to play this, whatever it is, like the sealed in box copy. I'm like, I don't want that. Like, what are you talking about? I'm not going to spend that much money. Like, it's stupid. Like, just right. Let me play the game. I'll give you $30. I don't know. Like, I kind of agree with that sentiment that like it, because yeah, it doesn't hurt change. It doesn't change the bottom line for that company one way or another. Because yeah, even if I spend $1,000 on a game on eBay, they're not going to get any of that. So
right, and that goes for across the board. That's Nintendo too. For me, we just had a perfect example for Mother 3.
Mm, yeah,
Nintendo put Mother 3 out in Japan, but they refuse to do it over here. They won't sell it to you on the eShop. They won't put it on Nintendo Switch Online. They never have. Since the game has come out in the early 2000s, and it doesn't seem like they're going to. So if you're not going to give it to me and I can't get it, I'm going to download it. I want to play it still. I don't understand what.
And I mean, even, and it just the translate, like with that, it's just the translation. Cause you could get a copy of Mother 3, but it's like, all right, I can't understand it.
I can't buy one to own. Right. It's out of print.
Oh yeah, same. Yeah, exactly. So it's like long out of print, and even if you could get your hands on a secondhand copy, it's like, all right, I can't understand this thing.
I can't understand
like,
it.
Like, I don't know what's happening.
So yeah, man. But this statement from Yuzu is absolutely crazy. Because the one thing that about emulation is such a multifaceted area, in my opinion, right? Because Yuzu was like, oh, we didn't have any idea that we were circumventing software to get our emulator working. What are you talking about?
A wild statement. It's like,
what are you talking? How do this, you?
You know exactly what the type you know of people
exactly
using.
What you were doing.
Oh, man.
And it's the only and I guarantee you Nintendo puts it in the EULA just like they have for decades now. The end user's license agreement that you cannot reverse engineer this software for any purpose or any use if you're not Nintendo or a Nintendo authorized, you know, entity to do so.
Right.
So it's weird that these companies do that and then people make emulators and then Nintendo or Microsoft or whoever, whatever it is, you know, they come and they say, yo, bro, when you bought the system, that was you agreeing that you weren't going to do that. And then all the emulator people go, what do you mean we could never do that? How dare you tell us what to do? Bro, they didn't tell you. You didn't have to buy the console. You didn't have to buy anything.
Nobody reads the fine print, Adrian. Everyone just hits agree.
I know that, but I'm saying it's a license agreement. That means you agree not to do it. No,
it's still legally binding whether you read it or not.
Whether you read it or not, you agree by using whatever the software is. Yeah. So, you know, you got to take it as a double-edged sword here, or I guess a multi-edged sword. So was Nintendo wild and out of pocket for charging them $2.5 million? 1,000%. At the same time, they were also wild for getting a $30,000 a month Patreon and playing in Nintendo's face like Nintendo wasn't going to do anything about it.
Honestly, that's probably the biggest problem with all of this is like if it was just like an open source, which it was open source. But if they would just like left it like it's a free thing,
I don't think they would have been shut down.
I wonder if Nintendo would have just been like not happy about it, but just like
right.
they've ignored
There's
it
nothing
this long.
We can do.
They've ignored it this long. They're probably just going to continue to ignore it. But the fact that, yeah, they freaking had a Patreon fired up so they could get people supporting them to keep making this thing and develop it further. It's like, oh, you were asking for Nintendo lawyers right. to come be like, hello, wakey, wakey.
It's like when matadors hold a little red cape in front of a bull. Right. That's exactly what they were doing with that Patreon. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Whatever this statement says, there's no way you didn't know what you were doing. You have to do that for any console. You have to reverse engineer the code. That's how you know how it works.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying. Like, I'm guarantee you this statement was 100% like Nintendo lawyer. Like, here you go. Here's your statement for the day.
Right.
Just because if they even, I don't know. I mean, probably a mix of both. A mix between Nintendo's lawyers. Some statements you read it and you're like, oh, that's from Nintendo. And then other, honestly, you know, like, that talking about the piracy thing too, like that was probably from their own lawyers, because if they admitted like, yeah, we knew what we were doing, like it wouldn't look very good legally, so they're probably like, we don't know. So
Right.
Absolutely crazy. But something I want to talk about, especially because I put it in the episode title for this week, so now we have to talk about it. This is a question I'm going to ask you. are other emulators in trouble? Is this a sign for, like, do you think there's a chance that, like, PlayStation's all of a sudden over there, like, Sony's like, oh, Nintendo just did it. Like, why aren't we doing it for the PCSX or whatever, which is like the PlayStation 2, PlayStation, mm-hmm. PlayStation, like, why aren't we doing it for that? Or, like, I don't know. There's like various other emulators that are out there. Do you think this could be a cause for concern for these other projects? Like, are they going to start like shutting things down or hiding things or just clamping down more or what?
No, because I don't think Sony or Microsoft, I don't think they're making nearly as much potential profit on their older library as Nintendo would have been. So, you know, Sony lost the sale of you know, some PS2 games that they could have sold on the PS4, PS5 store. Okay, well, we were only going to sell 10 of them anyway. Nobody's really playing PS2 games on PS4 and PS5 like that. Let's keep it real, right? The strongest one outside of Nintendo that would have a case would be Microsoft, because they have such a big backwards compatibility push, which they unfortunately ended recently.
Yeah, but there's no Xbox emulators out there anyways that work good, so, you know. I've never heard of a single person emulating an Xbox game, let's be real. Like, are emulating PlayStation games, or emulating Nintendo games, Sega games, and everything in between. But Xbox, right. I don't know if I've ever heard of like an Xbox.
That's why they're not worried about it. That's why they're not worried about it. Because I'm like, well, nobody's emulating our stuff anyway. Who cares? But yeah, I think Sony, their classic catalog is in modern day so minuscule compared to the sales that they're getting from PS4 and PS5. It's not even really worth going out. It would cost more in the legal process to you know, take action than it would whatever profits they would receive from not having anybody
download game
copies of their games.
Yeah, well, and what PlayStation is doing now is like a lot of those old random PS1 and PS2 games are showing up on their streaming service. Like, if you have a PlayStation Plus account, like, you can play them on there with the retro catalog or whatever. So that's what they're missing out on, is basically people buying out the top tier of their PlayStation Plus. What is it, like the Pro or Elite, or I don't even remember what it's called. There's like the three tiers, whatever the top tier is. They're losing subs on that in a sense, but I mean, yeah, it's like,
but the selection for that is
it is very small.
It's very small, and it's not all their greatest hits, right?
In fact, it almost seems like they're purposely picking all like the least
worst favorite ones.
Like, I get an update every month for like, hey, new games being added, and if it's a PS4 or PS3 game, it's like, oh, okay, that's a decent one. But if it's like a PS1 or PS2 game, I'm like, I've never heard of that in my life. What is that game?
Hey, did you want to play Shuffleboard 94 from the PlayStation 2? Like, sure, bro, thanks. What are we doing? So, if they're not even that enthusiastic about getting the library up there, I can't see them being much more enthusiastic about going after people who are, you know, downloading games and playing them like that, if they weren't going to try to make money from it in the first place, you know.
I also wonder, too, like, because a lot of those other projects, from what I understand, I haven't done extensive research, but like we talked about, Yuzu had a Patreon. A lot of those other ones, they may take donations and tips.
That's different.
But I don't think, I can't think of another one that I've seen like a Patreon logo, like, hey, support us on Patreon or whatever. Like, it's,
doesn't Dolphin like have a Patreon?
Oh,
maybe. The GameCube emulator?
Yeah, they might. I don't know. I don't remember seeing one, but they might. Man, if Dolphin got shut down, that'd be so sad.
That would be so sad, man.
That would be
horrible. They just got Apple Silicon support going on, and I can run GameCube games on my MacBook like it's nothing. It's buttery smooth. I would hate for that to go. But this is another case, right? There's same thing with Nintendo. Nintendo, where are the GameCube games at?
That's true. Well, they're re-releasing them in collections like that Super Mario collection or whatever, and like dumb things like that, or doing HD.
The one that they took away that they don't want you to buy.
It's
that
one. It was exclusive for like 4 months, or Pikmin when they did bring Pikmin 1 and 2 and stuff like that.
Just now, six years into the Switch's lifespan.
One thing,
and so, same thing with Metroid. 5 years into, they're not serious about this.
No, Dolphin might be safe only because there already was a Tuffle last year, if you remember. Remember they put Dolphin
it was trying to come to Steam.
On Steam, it was there for like a couple days, and then Nintendo's like, no, this isn't okay.
You're not doing this.
This is too easy. You've got to make it at least hard for people. So it doesn't look like Dolphin has a Patreon either. I'm on their website. So
okay, cool.
Yeah. So the fact that that's so interesting because Nintendo had every chance last August to be like, don't put it on Steam and we're suing you for $3 million, but they didn't. They just said, don't put it on Steam
Dolphin's like, it won't be a Dolphin anymore.
Dolphin's like, all right, cool. And they just turned around and like left, like, peace. So I don't know. I don't know why Yuzu is different. Like we said, other than the financial aspect of it, Yuzu was profiting from it more so than like if you go to Dolphin's site, there's nowhere on there about giving money, paying money, anything like that. There's just a link to like a Discord. They have forums and stuff like that. But I'm sure within those there might be like, hey, if you want to help out a little, like, but it's no like blatant like, oh, sign up to get exclusive stuff. Like, that's probably what got you and Citra in trouble, I'm sure.
I don't know, man. That's just the thing that gets my goat. And you know, they're probably going to say, oh, you guys are bootlicking. I mean, I'm not. I'm one of the farthest things from, right? But if you can't get mad when a company says, don't do X with our stuff, and then you do X with our stuff, and then they come and say, we told you not to do X with our stuff, cut it out, you're done. Yeah. And then the internet gets in a tizzy like they're this bully, right? No, they told you not to do it. They told you not to do it.
I mean, even like from the license agreement to, I mean, they've been getting on people for years, whether it's Dolphin, there was something with that Bowser dude too, right? Like what was he doing? I can't remember.
He was selling the mod chips.
He was selling mod chips. Switches. It's just like, all right, like everyone needs to chill out. Like, you know, if something happens, like, you can't be upset. You screwed around and, well, you found out.
I'm not saying don't do it, because we do need a Switch emulator, because we do need to have somebody to be dumping these games for preservation. 100%.
That's the biggest thing. Yeah.
All I'm saying is the internet needs to stop getting mad when Nintendo comes and knocks on their people's doors and being like, bro, we told you to stop doing that. You're done. And then the internet goes, oh my God, Nintendo always does this. They always take away everybody's fun. It's like, no. We knew what we were doing. We knew what the risks were involved when we were doing this. You got to take the L and move on. Somebody else has got to pick up the torch and make their own, whatever the next emulator is.
And just
don't act like we're the victims in this.
And just to be clear for the Nintendo lawyers, when Adrian says we, he's meaning the ambiguous, like, internet we, not us as Super Gamer Boys. Just
to be. I do not know how to code an emulator, Nintendo. You are fine over here, okay?
Don't know how to do that.
I don't have $2.5 million to give you for nothing, okay?
I've not made any money off of an emulator, and I have not made any money off of, dumping game, nothing like that.
Just for clearance sake. No.
Lindsay has a good point. Nintendo should have hired the Yuzu devs to come over and help them make a Nintendo license emulator.
Bingo.
There you go.
Apparently there's a rumor that Nintendo was supposed to be trying to bring their games to PC. You know what team would have worked well on that software? The one you just sued for $2.5 million, Dumbo.
Yeah, imagine.
That's not how you do it.
Imagine if instead of suing them, you hire them
and make them their own division.
Or give them the option to, like, give them the option to be like, hey, we're either going to sue you or you work for us, and this is what you're doing. And, you know, I'm sure there'd be a certain extent a fine, but it's like, hey, we'll take a little bit out of your paycheck for a little bit. But we also own Yuzu, but we're not going to sue you $3 million. It's only like maybe a few thousand dollars or something. Like,
you know what? I'd have taken that deal 10 times out of 10.
Been like, all right. sure, take the cut out of my paycheck and don't sue me. And you can have Yuzu. That's fine. Like, that's fine. Take it. Oh, man. Yeah. Man, imagine like a Nintendo license emulator. Like, here, play whatever you want. Although,
or their own launcher.
Right. Oh, yeah. For just playing the games on PC.
Yeah.
So good. Ah, that would have been great. I mean, obviously, that's like pie in the sky dreaming, but
it would be sick. Word on the street is they're looking. They're talking it over.
Everyone else is bringing their games to PC. Nintendo's next. Nintendo's got to do something here. All right. This next news story is kind of, we're going to be going over two stories, but we're talking about some major layoffs that are happening. So let's start with this first one. I believe it was the first one. Yes. Oh. This one happened on the 27th.
I hate to hear this.
Sony announces significant PlayStation layoffs affecting 900 staff. London studio to close. This is written by Wesley Yinpool over at IGN. Sony has announced a significant round of layoffs affecting around 900 staff, or about 8% of its global PlayStation workforce. The layoffs affect a number of PlayStation studios, including Insomniac, which just released like the blockbuster Spider-Man 2 hit, made, I don't know, probably millions.
Oodles of cash.
Tons of money. Millions of dollars. Naughty Dog, which just went through its own round of layoffs just a couple weeks ago.
They weren't doing nothing. They weren't doing nothing. It's okay. Right. I'm kidding. I'm talking about their output. Good grief.
Guerrilla Fire Sprite, which is the studio they just recently purchased
they
in
just
the last
bought
year.
Them.
They just bought Fire Sprite to make a live action game. They're like, sorry, cutting ya. And most significantly, PlayStation's London studio. Alongside the layoffs, a number of in-development games are canceled, Sony said. In a blog post, outgoing Sony Interactive Entertainment boss Jim Ryan issued an update on what he called a difficult day at our company. We have made the extremely hard decision to announce our plan to commence a reduction of our overall headcount globally by about 8% or about 900 people, subject to local law and consultation processes, Ryan said. Employees across the globe, including our studios, are impacted. These are incredibly talented people who have been part of our success. We're very grateful for their contributions. However, the industry has changed immensely, and we need to future-ready ourselves to set the business up for what lies ahead. We need to deliver on the expectations from developers and gamers and continue to propel future technology and gaming, so we took a step back to ensure we are set up to continue bringing the best gaming experiences to the community. Ryan published an email he sent out to the staff this morning and reassured PlayStation gamers that our plans for reorganizing and streamlining are so we can continue to deliver the best gaming experiences possible. I don't know who's making the games because they're firing them all, but apparently they're going to keep bringing some good experiences.
You mean like the ones that are coming this year? Oh, wait.
Wait a second.
Wait,
oh,
hold
shoot.
On.
Oh, shoot.
Sorry, I spoke too soon.
In the email, the staff, Ryan said, tough decisions have become inevitable and that the layoffs affect employees across all SIE regions with several PlayStation studios affected. U.S. employees will be told today if they still have a job in the U.K., where labor laws require a consultation process for mass layoffs. Sony has proposed shutting the PlayStation Studio London studio, which had previously created VR games entirely. Ryan didn't confirm that this in the email, but it seems likely London Studios co-op PlayStation 5 game set in a modern fantasy London is canceled. I assume if the studio shut down. Ryan has also also announced layoffs at fellow UK studio Firesprite, which is working on a new narrative game. The status of that game is unknown. Elsewhere, Ryan announced reductions in various functions across SIE in the UK. This goes on and on and on, but with other responses from various people within the industry. What a sad event.
Whack.
Like, I don't know. I mean, it's been happening everywhere, but it just seems wild. Like, because the some of the studios that were hit are like, they're big money makers. And recently, like in the last couple
yes.
months, and to be like, hey, you just made us a ton of money. Bye-bye. Like,
bye. See ya.
It almost feels like take the money and run. Like, we've made all this money and now we don't have to pay you anymore. But it's like they're still developing big AAA games. Like, Insomniac's in the middle of Wolverine right now. And another, like, unannounced project. Naughty Dog's working on an, quote-unquote, unannounced project, which we all know is a Last of Us Part 3. And, you know, and
oh.
apparently there's there's that rumored, you know, a new IP that they're kind of, like, in pre-production with. So it's like there's
right.
all these things. Firesprite working on a new narrative game. They originally brought in for a live service game, but I think they're, like, this article said they were working on a narrative game, too. That might be canceled. London Studio, They're only
gone.
Like they're one of their biggest VR studios, if maybe even their only one. Like, I feel like that's the one I ever hear about anyways, like gone. So it's like, all right. So you're basically saying PSVR 2 is dead as well, right? Like, that's what you're doing.
Like, in a roundabout way. I don't know if many people caught that, but that's what it sounded like to me.
That's what it feels like.
Didn't Fire, who made Call of the Mountain? Wasn't that Fire Sprite? Horizon?
Let me.
No. Yeah.
Quick. No, I don't think it was, but I can look it up.
Anyway, while you do that. So
yeah,
basically what this says to me is that they're doing a full 180 on that live service push. That is dead in the water.
It was Guerrilla alongside FireSprite. You were correct. So yeah, FireSprite just put out that PSV. So yeah. So not only London Studio getting shut down, but even FireSprite, who also apparently has a VR division, like getting shuttered.
That's
like,
done too. Yeah. Crazy. So that tells me that this live service push is done. We're not doing that anymore. That also is telling, like you said, that also is telling me that PSVR 2 is also done.
Yep.
So they're probably just going to let third parties really ride that out. Just like this is another Vita for them.
That's what they did with PSVR 1 though, too. They put out like a few like exclusive games and then they're like, all right, third party, take it over. Third party's like, no, because
no,
it sucks to develop for your system. Like, we're going to do it on Oculus.
And also, nobody's here.
Nobody's there. And so now they're doing the same thing with PSVR 2. And I don't, what do they expect? Of course, it's going to just die and be a failure because you didn't support the thing. Like,
here we go. Sony, good old fashioned cut and run Sony.
I don't get it. They can't commit to anything. They have.
Well, they can commit to like it, they as, have long as, it, as long as it makes them $10 billion in the first 24 hours, then you're good.
Right. That's true. It's got to be like an absolute crazy runaway success. Like, they have to catch lightning in a bottle, and then they're like, aha, we'll keep you. Otherwise, no, sorry, no one's safe here.
I feel like, can we segue for a second?
Let's do it.
With all this going on with Sony and with all the signs of you know, turmoil, I will say, now with it being the fourth or going into the fourth year of this console's life, let's just put it all out on the line. Is PS5 a flop? When you look at it, when you zoom out on the PS5, on its library, all of it.
I feel like it's
4 years in and it's barely crossed over 50. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's 4 years in and it's barely crossed over 50.
I feel like I saw an article recently, like in the last couple months, that talked about how technically it's selling better than the PS4 did at this time. Supposedly.
PS4 was way past this.
Which is hard to believe. I'd have to do a little Googling to confirm. So maybe once I'm done saying what I'm about to say, you can vamp for me for a little bit. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's a flop, but it definitely is a half step. It almost feels like this is a test, like a beta test for something. That's what it feels like. Because there's a lot of fun experiences that have come to PS5. And like we've talked about in previous episodes, unfortunately, a lot of those experiences, and not unfortunately, but those experiences are available other places. Right. But I feel like, so with that, it's like, yeah, it's kind of a flop, but I don't think it's a flop in the sense that like it's a failure, if that makes sense, because you know, it's hard to explain. I feel like the technology and the things they're trying with games and the things they're trying with, again, how fast the SSD is and the way they've built this new motherboard in it. Like, I feel like on a very physical technological level, PS5 was almost like a beta, like a test for like, all right, now when the PS6 comes out eventually, it's gonna we're gonna have all of this stuff dialed in 100%, and they're gonna be dialed in on their game engines, they're gonna be dialed in with their with Unreal 5 coming out, like game studios are utilizing that, and like this all sorts of stuff with AI and everything. I have a feeling, and I that's what I think the PS5 generation is turning into. I don't know if that's what they intentionally wanted it to be, but I think that's what it's turning into. They're learning a lot right now, which
right. They
also did in the PS3 generation. And in the end, that turned out not really to be a flop. For the first few years, it was. It was hurting. But by the end of the PS3 generation, they were killing it. Like,
right. With
the quality of the games, the amount of games, and even just what they're able to get the PS3 system to do. Like, man, like, they really, like, Last of Us came out towards the tail end. Like, the last year the PS3 was kind of a thing, really, right? It wasn't like right. The 2013 there, right before PS4 came out. So I wonder if the PS5 is going to be, is another PS3 for them, where, man, it's having a rough few years. Not that there's not anything good, because even the PS3 at the beginning, like, had some fun experiences. But I wonder if, like, the last year, like, this thing's going to pop off to the point where people, like, later are going to look back and be like, PS5 wasn't that bad, like, as a whole. Yeah, in the moment, it sucked. Because it's just like, man, give me a reason to buy this box. Give me a reason to buy this box. But I think it's just taking time. It's in the oven and it needs more time to cook. And it'll be like right before the PS6 comes out, all of a sudden they're gonna be like bang, bang, bang. It's like, now they've got
now
it.
They've got it. They've got it. PS5. Okay, I get it. Yeah.
So that's what I think. So I don't know. Because I don't want to straight out say like it's a flop, because I don't think so. Because to some people, this is the greatest console known to man. And you know what? Props to them. Props to them for just like, hey, they have a bar.
I'm glad you're having fun with
it. Yeah. Their bar is set here.
That's not the case.
Their bar is set here and they're having a good time. And you know what? That's awesome. I wish I was there. Unfortunately, my bar is up here.
And it's
self-imposed. Like, all of that's just stuff we can make up on our own head. And Sony is down here.
Is it self-imposed, or is it based on what they've already shown us they can do in the past versus what they're doing now?
A little of both. I think you're probably right. It's half right, where it's like they do have a track record of definitely outputting a lot more quality exclusive properties. But it's also self-imposed, because I could also just I also, in a sense, like, again, having experiences with other ecosystems, very much be like, nah, like, I'm having a hard time kind of putting it to words, but it's definitely a bias where, me personally, like, I feel like I'm not getting X value out of it. And the fact that some people are down here and happy, I'm up here not happy, like, I'm talking about bar. I'm not saying these people are lower than me. I'm just saying the bars in our head are set at different levels. That assumes there must be some sort of bias there as well, because otherwise these people should be unhappy as well. So the fact that I'm unhappy, it's like, well, you're right. Part of it is their track record, which that's on them. But I think part of it also is like, I could just be happy with it and just move on. But I think, because if I was just a Sony pony, like I was growing up, or we just had PlayStations, I would probably be content, because I'm like, I just have a PlayStation anyways and I'm fine. But having the luxury of more consoles and PCs and everything like that, if anything, it's made me a video game brat, and I don't like to admit that, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. And realistically, you know, having the Switch, having a Steam Deck, having a PC, having a PS5, it kind of ruins you, really. So
I feel like I'm on the other side of that coin, though. I feel like I don't necessarily think I don't think it's crazy to have those expectations, right? When you have shown your audience that you can output a certain level of quantity and quality, right? And you've conditioned your user base for literal decades before this generation that you could do this. And now you have an iteration of your product that is not that is objectively not performing, you know, nearly as close to as the ones that came before it. The library is not nearly as strong as the ones that came before it. I don't think it's necessarily us having or us being here and somebody else being there. I think it's Sony should be here and then everybody under that standard and at that standard should still be able to enjoy it, right? It's just like when, and this, I always say this, I hate this about Sony, and Sega fell prey to it too, is PS2 Sony and PS4 Sony. I hate PS2 and PS, or I'm sorry, not PS2, PS3 and PS5 Sony. PS3 Sony was, people bought PS2. They know we made PS2. We don't really got to do anything.
Yeah,
we're just going to sit over here and you guys will buy PS3 because we made PS2. And they got clobbered for 95% of that generation. Came back with their hat in their hand for PS4, bodied PS4's generation. Yeah. Now we're doing it all over again. PS4 sold 100 and some million. They know what. You bought PS4. You'll buy PS5. We don't really have to do anything. I hate it when companies rest on their laurels. And I feel like that's what they're doing right now. Because I know I have proof that you have done much better and you're not doing it here. Right? And now PS6, they're going to come back. Oh, we learned a lot. Like you said, we learned a lot with PS5. And now we're really ready to show you what the power of what PlayStation could do. No, you should have been doing that.
Right.
With 5. You should have been finding ways to continuously make the PS5 a better product. Cool. If I'm running the show, cool. I'm glad we're in the lead. How do we stay in the lead? How do we make PS5? How do we get the console to be an undeniable, this is a must-buy piece of hardware? How do we do that?
They got that as the short-term memory loss there, dude. Like
every time, every other generation, dude, it's so annoying.
I looked up some sales for PS5 versus PS4. And at the beginning, PS5 actually was outpacing PS4 somehow, which is surprising because even Alinzia in the chat makes a good point that the PS5 was hurt by supply issues at the beginning. Sales couldn't happen with most hype. But looking at this chart, they actually sold more PS5s in the first year than PS4s sold in the first year, which is interesting. But basically from the 1 year mark to the 3 year mark, PS4 is ahead. Mm-hmm. But then at the tail end here, so like the last couple of months, PS5 has been on par almost with PS4. It's only slightly less than what the PS4 was at 39 months. So where we're at now with 39 months, PS5 is... just a hair. I mean, there's no exact numbers here, unfortunately. It's not showing. Oh, right here. Okay. Oh, wow. It's closer than I thought. So PS4 sales after 39 months was 54,974,412. PlayStation 5 sales at 39 months. So this is January. So a couple months ago. 54,173,000. So it's only like an 800,000 difference. Huh. That's pretty close. When you're talking like that big of a numbers,
hey,
800,000 units, that seems pretty close to me, which is surprising. I thought it'd be a little further the gap, but that's actually really close.
And you know what? If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm happy to admit I'm wrong. Financially, it sounds like it's not.
No, it's not hitting. That's the article we talked about last month, right? Like they're not hitting target numbers, and that's why they were, you know, shutting things down. So it's like even though it's almost on par with the PS4, they were expecting more and we were expecting more. I mean, that's the moral of the story. Like we were expecting more from them and they're not delivering it. It's like, if you want us to buy the console, give us something.
You gotta give me a reason.
Give me a reason. Oh man. The second article, it's also part of this little section here with layoffs. I mostly want to address it because we just talked about a story like a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and already gone. So sad. Electronic Arts cuts job for more than 670 workers. This is written by Nicole Carpenter over at The Verge. Electronic Arts is laying off 5% of its workforce, or around 670 of the company's workers. EA employed around 13,400 people by the end of last March, according to a regulatory filing. 65% of those employees are located outside the U.S., it said at the time. Notifying impacted employees has already begun, blah, blah, blah. But what I want to get to is... no specific games were mentioned in Wilson's note as they were talking about what get things might have been affected in the layoffs. But although EA is currently developing several games based on licensed properties, like a reported third Star Wars Jedi game alongside Marvel's Black Panther and Iron Man, EA announced in 2022 that Respawn was developing three separate Star Wars games, one of which was Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Of the unannounced games, a first-person action title has been canceled, which was the Mandalorian game we just talked about 2 weeks ago, saying, oh, long we can't gone. Wait, this looks so good, like the sounds awesome, it's gonna be great. So scratch that. That's gonna be the thumbnail for this when I do the SGB clips. Is this gonna be that thumbnail with a big X in it? It says never mind. as we've looked at Respawn's portfolio over the last few months, what's clear is the game our players are most excited about are Jedi and Respawn's rich library of owned brands, which I don't know why they say that's not helpful, because we're losing a game. But yeah, so there's a lot more to this article. It's sad that this year's been kicked off by just, and we all know this isn't a new thing in the gaming industry, because that's what online people, every time we talk about, people are like, this happens all the time. Obviously, you don't know how business works. It's like, we know how business works, but
that doesn't mean it still doesn't suck.
It doesn't mean it still doesn't suck. So we just hope that all these people can get back on their feet and get a good job. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be in the gaming industry because everyone's laying off right now, but hopefully
I wouldn't stay in games. If I had to eat, I'm not staying in games. I'll go code. I'll go to Google. Well, I guess Google's laying people off too. I'll find something else. Okay.
I'll do anything else. Go work at Yuzu.
Oh, wait.
Wait a second.
Work at Yuzu.
Oh man. Yeah. It's sad. And it just doesn't, like, it just blows my mind, like, as we talk about it to death, is like, we want, like, there just needs to be, there's not, especially like this year, there's not a lot coming out this year. And then all these studios are making cuts, which is going to either cancel games or delay games even more. It just doesn't, the math doesn't add up in my head. Obviously financially, I get it. That makes sense. Whoop-de-doo. I agree with you people, bootlickers out there who are all for the pro company, you know? But from
the billionaire company alone.
I'm sorry I bullied EA, all right? I'm sorry. I'm not sorry.
Did we all forget that EA was evil like 5 years ago? Yeah. What happened?
but what doesn't add up is, like, people are like, we need more games. We need more games. There's nothing coming out in 2024. And they're like, hey, we got you. We just laid off almost 700 people. We're like, wait, what? That's not what we asked for. We wanted more games, right? You need people to make games, right? Like, I don't get it. It's just like,
but EA will be one of the few that's like, do we actually? Because AI is right there.
Yeah, that's evil EA. EA would 100% be like, make the first, if any game developer publisher company is going to make an all, like, 100% AI created game, it's going to be EA, guaranteed. Like, they're the first ones for sure. I mean, they were early on in the blockchain stuff that they tried to implement and stuff. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. It's either going to be EA or Ubisoft is going to make the all AI game.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to FIFA AI. You thought it was FIFA? No, it's FIFA AI. AI soccer 2025.
Oh man, that sounds horrible.
They would do it if there was a guaranteed huge return. I bet you they'd be on the shelf.
100%. Oh man. All right. Well, with that, let's move on to this last news story. Toys for Bob splitting from Activision Blizzard. Skylanders and Crash Bandicoot 4 studio being spun out, currently in talks in a partnership with Microsoft. That we'll get to that in the article. That's something that doesn't add up to me, but we'll talk about that.
Skylanders is back, baby.
This is Woo! From Brendan Sinclair over at, where is this? Gamesindustry.biz. Toys for Bob today announced that it will be returning to its roots as an independent studio spinning off from Microsoft and Activision Blizzard. We believe that now is the time to take the studio and our future games to the next level, said studio heads Paul Yan and Avery Lodato in a post on the company's website. This opportunity allows us to return to our roots of being a small and nimble studio. While the studio is splitting off, it is not cutting ties with Microsoft entirely and is exploring a possible partnership with its former parent. It is also working on a new game, but that title is expected to remain unannounced for some time. Yan and Lodato emphasize that Activision and Microsoft have been extremely supportive of our new direction. The studio did not address where it might be located, as Microsoft recently laid off 86 Toys for Bob developers and closed the studio's physical office as part of a wider swath of cuts to the Xbox organization. I don't know if I knew about layoffs, but I didn't realize they shut down their physical studio.
Yes, people thought Toys for Bob was out of here, dude.
Jeez, crazy. Imagine being one of those 86 that just got laid off, and then Toys for Bob is like, just kidding, we're spinning off to do our own thing. Be like, wait, what? They couldn't have like done that like a month ago? Like,
right, before we had to fire? What do you mean we could have bought our way out of? What?
That was an option? That was an option? Founded in 1989, Toys for Bob has worked on numerous hit franchises, starting with Star Control and continuing on through spinoffs for Tony Hawk Pro Skater and Guitar Hero before making its signature hit with Skylanders, Spyro's Adventure. More recently, the studio developed Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, and last year's Crash Team Rumble.
Fire.
And also has chipped in on Call of Duty projects like Modern Warfare 3 and Warzone. So, yeah, with this, I guess my curiosity is, and maybe now that I've read the article in full, because I read a little bit of it, I didn't read the whole thing, because I like to be a little surprised in the podcast. It's fun to just make it up on the spot. No, I'm kidding. But at first I was confused by the partnership with Microsoft. I'm like, they're splitting off. Like, why do they want anything to do with them kind of thing? Like, go do your own thing, have fun. But what I wonder is, now it's adding up in my head, like you mentioned, Skylanders is back, baby. Technically, the full title of Skylanders, they mentioned it here in the post, is called Skylanders Spyro's Adventure, which is still, I assume, an Activision Blizzard and now Xbox IP.
Right.
So I wonder if that's the partnership, is like, hey, we're going to bring Skylanders back, but we need to license Spyro and Crash and stuff like that, as well as whatever their unannounced new IP is as well, which is going to be cool. But
they could technically do Skylanders. I don't know if they own the Skylanders IP, but the one with Spyro in it, like the one that you said, they can make Skylanders games without Spyro. Spyro was just a hook to get people in the door.
Yeah, so that's true. I'm sure there's plenty. I never played Skylanders, but I assume as enough original characters and story. Mm-hmm. Where you're probably right. They could spin it off into something else. But yeah, at this point, we don't really know what the IPs that they get to take with them are. Do they get Skylanders? Are they getting other things they've worked on, or like partial, you know, rights on things? Like, the deal,
they may not
still
get them, but that's why they want to stay buddy buddy with Microsoft, is because it'll be much easier to get Spyro if they need them.
Totally. So I don't know. We'll have to stay tuned, but that is exciting.
I'm glad.
I'm glad they did that. There's another studio last week that did the same thing, right? Someone just bought themselves out from Embracer Group. It was Aspyr Media.
Yeah.
Because it was the studio that was working on the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake. And so people are like, okay, like I've heard some people talking about it, like, all right, does that mean like they
can't afford the license? No. KOTOR's not coming. They're not firing that back up. Disney is going to charge them way too much.
But I mean, maybe. I don't know. I guess my curiosity, because originally got kind of paused and then shut down because of executives not liking the way it was going. I assume they were Embracer executives who were not happy with the direction, stuff like that. Maybe it was Disney people as well, but I also assumed it was more Embracer people being like, yeah, this isn't worth our time.
Right.
Let's move on. So I don't know. I'm just wondering if Disney, we never heard a for sure, and obviously we probably never will, we never heard a for sure statement from Disney saying that they didn't like what Aspyr was working on. It all just came from Embracer. My curiosity is like, if Disney liked what they saw, they might just let them work with it and like work a deal out with Aspyr. Like, I don't know. I think there's a possibility we could get KOTOR back. I think that'd be sick.
I mean, nothing's impossible, right?
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. It wouldn't be a thing where Aspyr would pay for the license. I think it would have to be some sort of like weird deal where Disney's like, you make the game for us and you get a cut, but it's going to be a lot smaller cut to kind of pay for a licensing type fee or something like that. But built into like because you're right. Like Disney's going to be like, all right, pay us $1 million, and Aspyr's like, we just spent $1 billion to Embracer Group. But I don't know if whoever's over at the Disney game console there. It's just like, hey, well, the demo we saw, we actually enjoyed it. We don't know what Embracer was talking about. They might be like, hey, Aspyr, you want to team up? Let's fire this the stove back up, dude. Let's get this fire roaring. Get that game out. But, man, I don't know. We'll see. Alenzia makes a cool point that I never thought of. But I want KOTOR to have a Final Fantasy VII style remake. Like, make it so much more. Imagine.
Oh, baby.
That's very good.
Oh, like, what a game that would be. That's an instant game of the year right there.
Ooh, fire. Absolute fire.
Woo.
That'd be pretty sick. And yeah, make it like expanded even too. Like that would be a little confusing because there is like a Knights of the Old Republic 2. But imagine they would have to be very specific branding. I guess like what Final Fantasy VII is doing, where it's like Final Fantasy VII and then like a name. So it would have to be like Knights of the Old Republic remake and then Knights of the Old Republic
2
rebirth. Knights of the Old Republic. I don't know, whatever they call it.
Star Wars Rebirth.
Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic Rebirth. Everyone's like, what? Joke's on you. We're bringing the world of Final Fantasy VII and Knights of the Old Republic in one. It's another multiverse collision. Everything's coming together. Cloud shows up on Bespin. Freaking Darth Vader is fighting in Midgar.
You joke, but I would love to see Vader and Sephiroth throw down.
I mean, that's a Kingdom Hearts thing right there.
It is.
Kingdom Hearts 4? When's that coming
out? Star Wars. It's coming. It's got Star Wars in it. We already saw that they had Endor.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I've never played any of the Kingdom Hearts games, so I don't know any of
them. Yes, you did.
I played the first one. That doesn't count. That's an old one.
What do you mean that doesn't count?
I need to play more at some point, but I need you to make me. That's the only way I'll do it. All right.
Unretired book club then.
Unretired book club. It's been a minute.
Yeah.
I also don't have, we'll see. I got Final Fantasy. Let me finish Final Fantasy VII Rebirth first. Let me finish Rebirth, please. And then we can fire a book club again. How about that?
That's fine.
Oh, man. That is it for the Nerdy Newts this week. I think it's now time to jump into our Patreon ad.
Let's do it.
This is the part of the show where I tell you to go over to patreon.com/supergamerboys and support us over there, starting at just $1 a month. That's right, $1. You get episodes early and ad-free, such as this show and our Patreon-exclusive Super Later Boys. You can only get that over there. You also do get ad-free versions of Super Gamer Book Club and a Season 1, which was completely unreleased. That's also Patreon-exclusive. So if you're looking for more of our content, some older content, archive stuff, support us on Patreon, starting at just $1. You get access to all of that. We had a whole Season 1 of Book Club that is only and hosted by Zech, a previous host of the show. He kind of started it up back in the day. It was a fun one. It was fun having a different guest on talking about, at that point, focusing on iconic video games through the decades. I think we have a BioShock episode. We did there was a game that came out last year that was remade. I can't remember what it's called, a horror game. Dead Space, that's what it was. Dead Space episode. All very, very good. Think about supporting us at $1. If you want to support us a little bit more and want to get a little bit more content out of us, have a little more action behind the scenes on our show, $5 a month, and you get access to our show notes. You can see what we're going to be talking about, news stories on there, questions for the show, what we've been playing, all of that. And you can leave your own questions, comments, concerns right on the dock. That's right, you can leave your comments on the dock. You click on the dock, where you want to leave a comment, type it in, hit the check mark, and then I can see it pop up right here on the Google Doc. And so if there's a game you've been playing, you want to talk about it, write it up. Let us know. Give us a little, I don't go on for 10 minutes, but give us a little bit. I'd love to hear about it. If you have thoughts about the news stories, if you have thoughts on the Yuzu devs in the whole lawsuit situation, you could have left your thoughts on there. If you have answers to the listener questions, if you wanted to throw your two cents in on what your weapon of choice would be or what companion do you want to bring with you, you could have left it on the dock. So if you want a little more interactivity with our show, think about supporting us at that $5 level. $10 a month, you can be a Super Gamer sponsor where you get all those previous perks and a shout out on the top of each and every episode. And then the top dog tier, $15 a month, Patreon producer, you can get all the previous perks and you have access to pitch us a segment. That's right. If you have an idea for a cool segment of the show or various other social media things. A little teaser for those watching live. If you're watching on Wednesday, I guess this has already happened, but for those live, there might be more Kajoma's Card Game Corner coming soon. That's going to be more of a social media focused thing. But if you have any ideas or some cool stuff that you're thinking about, you want to pitch us that segment, you want us to kind of give it the old college try, think about supporting us at $15 a month. We've tried more things than I would like to say we've tried. Some are fantastic. Some are not great. And you know what? You don't know until you try. So think about supporting us over there. We love the ideas. We love the fun. We love this community. So if you want to be a part of this awesome community, support us at patreon.com/supergamerboys. You can also support us at sgbstore.com, where you can buy cool sweatshirts like this. That's right. Wearing my Super Gamer Boys crew neck sweatshirt. You can buy the awesome dad cap. We got stickers. We got all sorts of goodies over there. Coffee mugs. Maybe a new hat coming soon. I don't know if Adrian's got a sample yet. Maybe not. Probably not for... Oh, it came in. Oh, baby. We're getting the grand reveal in the ad. Oh, baby. All right. Are you going to show it off or no?
Actually, if you were with me during the Clue Finder stream I did last week, that's when I premiered it. Oh. Didn't say a word about it. Just rocked it the whole stream. Had it on. You know?
That's great.
Just, we got some things we're working on, okay?
Ooh, baby, look at
that.
We
got some stuff in the works, all right? Just
love it.
Chill out, all right? It'll be there when it gets there. That's all you need to know about it.
That's all you need to know. You can also support us by going to twitch.tv/thesupergamerboys. And if you have Amazon Prime, that means you have a free Prime gaming sub each and every month. Costs you $0. If you use it on our channel, you get access to emotes. You get access to ad-free viewing. And we get $5 out of it. That's right. Cost you zero. We get $5. You get access to no ads on our channel. And the ability to use our emotes. We got a couple fun ones on there. If you'd like to use those, get that ad-free viewing. Think about dropping that sub. All right, that's it for the ad here. Now, let's get back to the show. All right, Adrian. This is the part of the show where I ask you the most important question you're going to be asked all year.
What's that?
Who are you voting? No, I'm just kidding. What you playing?
Well, if you want to get into it, okay.
What you playing, Adrian? What are you playing?
Oh, man. So I dove pretty hardcore back into Kirby and the Forgotten Land lately.
Oh, for the Switch. Yeah. That came out last year, right? Yeah.
I think year before last, or last year, if I'm not mistaken. I think 2022.
Okay.
That game is so good from top to bottom.
It's a fun
one. It looks great. It plays great. It sounds great. The soundtrack is incredible in that game.
Yeah.
The worlds are awesome. The new powers are awesome. Across the board, man.
Mouthful mode.
Mouthful mode. There's always a new mouthful mode you don't expect, and it's always fun. It's just, oh man, that's a friggin' game that Kirby game is, dude.
That's a fantastic one to play co-op as well. That's one I play with my son Shepard, and he can mostly handle it. He's 6, and there's a couple instances he's had issues, but for the most part, yeah, he actually can handle it pretty well, and it's a lot of fun. He loves it. I let him be Kirby, and I'm the little
Waddle Dee.
The Waddle Dee or whatever like that. But yeah, we have a good time with that one. That's one I don't play enough. That is, you're right. That is a fun one.
It is an awesome game. You know, and it's unfortunate that it's for people who, you know, play games. Like I'm a gamer's gamer, you know. It's like, oh, it's seen as lesser because it's not necessarily incredibly difficult or it doesn't require a whole lot of complexity. But, you know, not every game, I don't need to be, you know, putting in Helldivers combos just to get, you know, to the other side of the island in a Kirby level. You know, it's okay, right, for some games to be simplistic.
Yeah.
You know, it also takes a great deal of talent to make a game simple as well. And to be simple and intuitive and easy to play. It takes just as much as to make it difficult as it does to make it easy. So totally. A lot of people forget that. Yeah, so I'm having a blast with that game. No notes yet. I'm pretty sure I'll have some when I finish. I hope it's not over anytime soon. The other game that I've been playing is a co-op game that I play on my lunch break with my coworkers, and it's called Heave Ho.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah. So the way that this works is there is obstacle courses, in a sense, and you play this game with your hands and your arms. So the control stick controls the little blobs' arms, right? They're little blobby characters. And let's say, for example, you're on one side of a gap, and the goal is on the other side of the gap. Well, one of you is going to have to grab the edge of the gap and jump and hang down. And then you're going to have to grab the hand of the other player and swing them down into the gap with you. Sorry, I'm moving my arm as I do this. And swing them down into the gap with you. And then you both need to swing your bodies in concert to get the momentum so that when player one lets go, player two goes flying to the other side of the chasm and grabs it there. And the cycle ensues and it gets harder and harder. And you can do it with up to four people. And it's absolute hilarity. I love it. Only $10 too. And I feel like nobody's ever talked about it. It's a Devolver game, believe it or not.
What's it called again?
Heave Ho.
Heave Ho. That sounds fantastic. It sounds like
it's
so much
amazing.
Fun.
It's a steal for just $10, dude.
I have never heard or seen this before. This looks great.
Okay. It's awesome.
Oh, look at that. It's on Switch. It's on Windows and also Amazon Luna, in case you were wondering. So you can stream
it.
Oh. I can't believe Amazon Luna is even still a thing.
For now. Well, Amazon, they own the servers, so they can just afford to eat that.
That's true. No, that sounds fantastic. That sounds like such a fun, like, because there's not a ton of those. I mean, there's a lot that have come out over the years, but I feel like recently there hasn't been a good, like, yeah, like kind of silly co-op game like that have that's mm-hmm. come out. So that's really cool. I wonder, does it say when it came out here? 2019. It's even still a few years old.
I've had it for a while. I just never had a chance to get around to playing it. So. Huh.
That's fun. That's really cool. I'll have to check that out. I need to watch some gameplay. That looks fun. Yeah, it's only $10. That's great. Man, Devolver makes great games. Like they don't make them. They publish them. But they're a fantastic publisher.
They know how to
pick them. Yeah, they're like, all right, this is gonna be a hit. And
I feel like I would do well at Devolver. I'm just throwing it out there.
throw that application out there. You never know.
You know, I'm okay. I'm doing my independent Mr. Good Taste thing, you know, but if Devolver ever wanted to reach out.
Okay. I see. That was like a contractor or something. You could have your main gig and then on the side kind of like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Taste Maker over here.
We got to call in the big guns. Call. It's time to call Mr. Good Taste.
Good Taste. Oh man. Lindsay says you are an elite game publisher or whatever. That's true.
I am. I am.
You did win the fantasy draft last year. Fantasy game publisher.
I'm just saying, back in 2019, in my circle, I didn't hear anybody talking about Playdate. Just throwing that out there. That was 4 years ago. I was talking about it. Had my eye on it. Now look at it. They can't keep it on the shelf.
Head of the game. Head of the game.
Head of the game. Try to tell you. Heave ho. Don't sleep on it. I'm trying to tell you.
It's gonna Heave Ho 2 is gonna come out. It's gonna be a Helldivers 2 situation where the servers are maxed out.
It's gonna be
play.
Over the shoulder.
You can't play. Imagine that. I was even thinking like, yeah, the servers are maxed out, Heave Ho 2, like you can't play it. People are like staying logged in for days and days on end just so that way with the one time they sit down, they're able to play. They don't have to wait in line in the server.
You graphic cards just going for 16 hours straight.
Could have been here on the ground floor, but no, you slept on it.
You weren't there.
I've been playing one thing in particular, and that is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
And I've been popping in and out.
It's very good. I don't know how much more I'm going to stream. I might still stream it, but it's not going to be like, I'm not going to stream 100% of the game on Twitch. And I made that clear in the last stream because I'm like, hey, sometimes I'm going to want to play this game, but I'm not going to want to stream. And I'm not going to wait until the night I can stream to play this game. I'll tell That's you fair. That much. This That's is a fair. Very, this is a big game with a lot going on. You might see more of it on Twitch from me, but it's not, you're not going to get the full picture. This is not a full playthrough. Sorry.
Yep.
But
I absolutely hate that I have to watch. I love that I can watch it, but I hate that I have to watch it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Totally. But man, the game is so good. Now I'm about seven and a half, 8 hours in now. And so far, no negatives. Actually, if you want to hear my thoughts alongside Jeremy Schmidt, mm-hmm. over at Video Games, a comedy show. The episode just came out today, Monday, where he had me and Matt, I'm going to say his name wrong, Apodaca? I don't know. All I know is
Apodaca, I believe.
Big time podcast producer. I got to hang out with him a bit. It was cool. First time on a show with him. And talk about Final Fantasy. So it was crazy. Matt has played through in the last like 2 months. He played through the entirety of the original Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VII Remake and the DLC, basically leading right up to the release of Rebirth, and then started playing Rebirth. So he's experienced
the whole thing
in like just a month or two.
It's did he play
absolutely
Crisis Core?
Wild. He did not play Crisis Core.
Slacking.
That was
slacking.
One thing he said. Uh-huh. He said he didn't get to. But it's only because like he literally played up to the release of Rebirth. And I think it was something where like he was so excited about Rebirth, he didn't want to wait. So he just jumped into Rebirth. But he said he plans to hit it. But I think they watch Advent Children too, which
you could, like, they could do that because they played the original Final Fantasy
right,
VII.
Right. I know. I'm just saying though, like that's they're getting deep into it. Like they're getting into all he's getting into all the Final Fantasy VII games. So yeah, pretty crazy. So yeah, go check that episode out. That was a fun one to do with them. But
how did
for you guys
play Crisis Core?
For you guys, yeah, I do. It's this game is just so fantastic. So right off the bat, something that I've talked about, yeah, during the streams, if you caught any of those, was like graphically, I feel like it's about the same. I don't feel like the graphics are any better. And even in some places, I was even commenting on like the character models don't look as good. Like they're kind of blurry and fuzzy and funny looking. But I think
you are playing in performance though. You gotta, I would mention
but
that,
even,
aren't you?
I also was just like, 2 days before Rebirth came out, I played through the Yuffie DLC for Remake, uh-huh. and I was playing that in performance mode, and that was crispy. But again, what I was going to say, though, is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, much, much, much bigger world with a lot more going on.
Vastly.
Midgar seemed big, like some of like the spaces you could play in were big-ish, and they were designed in a complex way to like look like there's more going on than there really was. Very beautiful, don't get me wrong, but also like a very sterile industrial world. Midgar, it's in the city, it's in their factories, it's like a very industrial look to it. And so with that, it's like, all right, there's not really a lot going on here. Like it's very easy to just make a facade that looks like there's a lot going on, where this mm-hmm. really is a wide open world with so much going on, from like trees and rocks, foliage, all sorts of stuff, people walking around, a bustling city with shopkeepers and people coming in and out and all sorts of, like, it's like amped up to 11 on this one with what they're managing to do with this game engine. Now on stream the other night, I could have swore like a couple months ago, someone said they were using Unreal 5. But then on stream the other night, you said, no, it's Unreal 4. That shocked me because,
yeah,
because like I said, there's, even though it doesn't look better graphically, it looks about the same. It is like the fact that there's just so much going on and the world looks great. That's the thing. I find a lot of times the world graphically, the world looks better than like the character models sometimes until you get a cutscene. When you get a cutscene, it's like, whoa, this is gorgeous. But then, yeah, so looks great. Feels great. Gameplay. So, so good. The combat is just as smooth as ever. Feels great. I love how in the open world, there's this random enemy encounters, which, I mean, well, they're not random in the sense of like Pokemon where you're just walking around and all of a sudden you get attacked by something. I love that you can see them. Like you see them in the overworld. You see like people walking around or like creatures scuttling around or whatever. So you can decide to like run up on them or not. But there's just like the variety in the different creatures. Now I'm only just in the first open world, the grasslands it's called. So I assume each biome or world or whatever is going to have various different creatures and stuff. But even just what I've come across in the grasslands has been so much fun, like different abilities, different looks, stuff like that. Yeah, the fighting is super smooth. I love like the action, fast paced action style with the ability.
You can change your costume that early now?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, you said different looks and different weapons and stuff. You said different looks. I thought you meant like different costumes.
Oh, no. I was just saying that. Just different, like the different abilities, different materia, and different, what was I going to say?
Weapons,
like they've added in. So this was something, I don't remember it being in Remake. Maybe it was, and I just didn't know how to use it. It was definitely in the Yuffie DLC though, if I remember right. But, the ability to like, fight together or like the what do they call it, there's like a word for it,
like a team up,
yeah, like the team up power up. I don't remember Remake having that, but Yuffie's DLC did, and then it's in Rebirth now, and it's so fun because they have like a full skill tree devoted to unlocking abilities with specific people. So it's like, oh, unlock this ability that you can just do with Tifa, and this one just with Aerith, this one just with Barret, this one, you know,
it's Persona social links.
Exactly. Huh. It's so cool. So there's like a whole skill tree. You can choose where to put the point. You can respec it for free at any time too. So at any time you're like, I don't like what I picked, just reset all the points and go back through the skill tree again. It's really cool. So the combat's a blast. A lot more going on than even I understand 8 hours in still. Like I'm still figuring things out. Like, oh, wait, I can upgrade my weapons in this way and, you know, do these combos and different things. So much fun. Queen's Blood. We gotta talk about Queen's Blood. Probably
Marvel Snap.
It's Marvel Snap if it was good, you know.
Oh, Kajoma, you hear that? You hear that? Whoa! Get him, get him, Gary, get him!
It's so much fun. Like it's the three lane card thing, you know. You're just putting cards down. But what I love is that you can cross over into each other's lanes. There's the idea of like, okay, like, if you can build faster, you can actually, because there's like 6 or 7, maybe that, I don't know. There's three lanes, but then within each lane, I think there's like only a certain amount of, it's an odd number, obviously. I think it's either, I think it might actually be 5. So you could have, there's 2 on each side and there's like a center one. So if you can like build fast enough, you can get that center one, kind of get you get one extra space in them. So you could potentially have more points in that row. That's the whole gist of the game, is to have the most points in that row. And if you have the majority of the rows that you're winning in, you win the game. Marvel Snap. The cards are extremely fun, the different abilities. You can't build in a row unless the card that you use prior to it allows you to. So that's the other thing. The cards you're using also, it has a little picture on it, and it says, when you place this card here, it allows you to build out another card in like... a cross position, or this one is like an L-shaped or whatever like that. So you can't just build in a line like straight across unless you have cards that do that. Like you're kind of at the whim of whatever card you play previously where you can build next. There's a lot more to it, but overall, I'm just, every chance I can play Queen's Blood, I'm taking it. Like I am so stoked on it, to the point where I'm like, when are they making the spinoff game? Like Witcher 3 got their Gwent spinoff. When is Square Enix putting out their Queen's Blood spinoff. Like, that's what I
You got to keep life. Talking about it. You and everybody else, you got to keep bugging them. That's the only way.
I need this on my phone, like, immediately. I need to be able to play Queen's Blood at any time on my phone. That's what I want. Yeah, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is a very, very good game, and I am very excited for it, to the point where, like, and we'll see how I'm doing 30 hours in, but at this point, I'm, like, 100%ing everything, like, doing every side mission, every side quest, every side gig, making all, like, as much money as possible, and absolutely loving it. Like, I have no intention to slow down, because this is so freaking good. They added crafting. That's another thing. Crafting is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I feel like in Remake, they didn't. That I remember.
No.
But this one,
you had to go to the Moogle for that.
Right. So this one, you collect things in the world. It feels like, to me, like the first comparison that popped in my head was like, oh, this is like Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, there's literally like, will this be, it's even like similar icons. Like, you're walking through the world, like through the grass, and it's like the little icons that pop up and, oh, pick this grass, pick this herb, pick this whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then you can use all that stuff, the sticks and rocks and herbs and stuff, and make a potion, make an elixir, make whatever you need, armor, even, like, eventually you can craft your different armors and stuff for players. I'm like, this is so cool. I love this. So I'm all in right now. I'm excited for this one, and I'm excited for the story. There's been some, even just in the first, in the opening cinematic, you were there. We're like, what is happening right now? Like, they just started blowing stuff out of the water. I don't want to spoil anything here. I mean, you can go watch the stream, but it's like, what is happening? This story is so wild. So I'm all in. This is so much fun. And more I'm realizing, like, man, I want to play the original now. Like, if I get through Rebirth and really love it, I might jump over and do the original. It's better late than never, you know?
Yeah. And then we could go and then we could watch Advent Children finally.
Yes, finally. I think that's good. I had one more thing I technically didn't play, I watched. I'll just talk about it real quick. Hideo Kojima's documentary that came out on Disney Plus and Hulu.
Oh, I didn't know that was out.
Yeah, it came out on the 23rd. It's fine.
Really?
I expected it. So I was hoping more to get, like, I don't know. Because that was even, like, kind of the description. Like, oh, see, hear about the story of this, you know, Kojima and him starting up Kojima Productions, the development of Death Stranding, blah, blah, blah. And in my head, I had hyped it up to like a Raising Kratos level. Did you watch that documentary?
I love Raising Kratos.
Raising Kratos is seriously one of the best documentaries I've ever seen out of anything.
Have, like, you seen Grounded 2 yet?
No, it keeps popping up on my YouTube feed. Oh. It keeps popping up on my feed. I haven't watched it yet. But like Raising Kratos is like, that's like God tier, like gaming documentary for me. Like that was so emotional. Like I cried in that documentary. Like it was like such a roller coaster watching them develop this game. Like they gave you the good and the bad.
Yep.
This was not that. This is a fluff piece for Hideo Kojima. This is just everyone jumping on and glorifying him and just being like, he is the greatest game. This is, I wish I could remember who said this, because I'm pretty sure this is almost an exact quote. Almost. I'm not going to say it with 100% certainty because I can't remember. But there is someone who basically straight up said he is one of the greatest game developers to ever be, kind of thing. Like in the last 30 or 40 years. I'm like, wow. Like he's great. In my opinion, I would say, yeah, okay. And for my taste, yes. But
overall,
there's a lot of good games out there. Like there's some legendary status games that I don't know if he comes close. Like, so
that kind of talk is like Miyamoto talk, you know,
right?
That level.
So that's what the whole thing was, is just like interviewing a bunch of people and then talking about how great and how like weird his style is. And like, man, his brain is just, he's always creating worlds no matter where he is and what he's doing. And like, how does he do it? Like, it's just a magical. And it's just like, all right, he's just a dude, guys. Like, all right, like he's cool. I love his games. I love him, but he is just a guy at the end of the day. So they talked about Death Stranding a little tiny bit, but again, what I didn't like is it was all like kind of, what's the term? Kind of
a
like
commercial.
Yeah. No, not even that. It wasn't even a commercial for the game. What I was going to say is the quality of content was very much, I don't know if this is the correct term, but like whitewashed, where it's like you didn't see any of the bad. It was all just the good. You just saw curated? Like, yeah, it was very heavily curated to where it's just like, there's it was like, oh, roses and sunshine, the whole development. And yeah, things got tough, but we worked through it. And it's, it worked out in the end.
Elaborate on that.
And it's just like, why? Like, that's one thing I loved about Raising Kratos is when, like, freaking they're sitting there and they're like, I haven't slept in 6 days and seen my wife and kids in a week. And, I haven't eaten in how many hours? Shoot, it's been like 24 hours I haven't eaten. And it's like,
man,
we hit this roadblock. Oh, shoot, like delays. This, that, like, I don't know. They got deep and heavy in like Raising Kratos. And this one, they're just like, ooh, everything was good. And the game came out and it was
making
perfect.
Games is so much fun.
I'm like, this is such a wild, wild documentary. So yeah, at the end of the day, I was not a fan of it. It was just like, this is a commercial. This is a commercial for just Kojima, and didn't have anything to do with anything other than just making him look like God.
Well, at least now you know.
Now I know. Yeah, so I would not recommend the Hideo Kojima documentary unless you're just interested in anything at all about this man. If you're just like, I don't know who he even is, I've just heard the name. Watch it, I guess. It's all, who knows how much of it's true and how much of it's exaggerated. Probably very heavily exaggerated, but still wild. He definitely has a unique style, which comes out in it. Like, just kind of showing you, like, because there's people who are like, I've worked with other game developers, like the guy who did, like made Resident Evil franchise.
I keep wanting to say Kitase.
Yeah, he came
out.
Whoever that was. He's at Tango Gameworks now. It said that. It said Tango Games.
Yeah, he worked on the
Evil Within.
Evil Within. My God.
So that
it's
guy.
It's an SH name.
And then one other guy, another Japanese developer, and they're both like, he has such a crazy, like, they were very upfront, like, the way Kojima makes games is different than how anyone else makes games. Like, he is wild. So I will give him that. Like, all right, he has a unique style, but it's not worth like being like, he is the greatest of all time and always will be. It's like, calm down, guys. All right. yeah, crazy. Are you looking up that developer right now or no?
I'm trying. I was hoping to have it by the time you were done.
Oh, no worries. Well, with that, I'll, let's move on here.
Shinji Mikami. There we go.
I think that's who it was. Yep, I'm pretty sure that's who it was.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate each and every one of you, especially those who tune in each and every week, whether it's on our live stream Monday nights when we live stream the recording of this show, or it's Wednesday when the episodes come out, or if it's any other day of the week when our SGB clips are coming out on both YouTube and our reels and shorts on Instagram, TikTok, everywhere else. We appreciate everyone who likes and comments and shares. You guys rock. Thank you very much. If you want to support us more financially and help us keep making cool things, you can head over to patreon.com/supergamerboys and support us over there, starting at just $1 a month. We appreciate any and all the support. You guys are all awesome. Thank you so much. SGBstore.com, you can support us and get cool merch such as a sweatshirt or the dad cap, or who knows, maybe new stuff coming soon.
Ooh.
Maybe. Check it out, SGBstore.com. We got some fun stuff. Shout out again to Jack Sriracha and Yate for allowing us to use their music on our show. Make sure to check their links out on Spotify and Apple Music. Look them up, add them to your playlists, play them, repeat, do it again. You can find us during the week at supergamerboys.com, Twitter and Instagram at supergamerboys. I am on Twitter and Instagram at G Morling. Adrian, where can people find you at?
You can find me any and everywhere at Homeboy.
All right. With that, I am done. So Adrian, take us out.
Sounds like a plan, folks. I'm not going to keep you long because it's late and this episode was long. So thank you for hanging out with us. We appreciate any and every way that you support us, whether it be hanging out here, telling a friend about it. It is all majorly appreciated. We will see you next week. And until then, we are the Super Gamer Boys.
And we'll catch you on the flippity flop.
Whew. Boy, that was, what was that? Like a 6-hour podcast? It felt like one.
Almost.